You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy, crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy.
Good Friday morning to you. Mike McMurrin for Friday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So I watched episode 5 last night in the Vietnam War. Holy shit, man. You know, Tim Lynch and I were having a conversation earlier in the week about, and Lynch was all over that Musgrave guy, about being afraid to key the handset and talk. Yeah, on behalf of Tim Lynch, I want to take that back. You know, I hadn't read a whole lot about Con Tien. Holy shit, man. Guys of a Con Tien, that's, if I'm not mistaken, that's where 19's operating up there. That's where they get their name, The Walking Dead. So I need to do a little exploration about Con Tien. You know, they move Marines up under the umbrella of the, and then I need, the other thing I was thinking about was, when did we invent counter-battery radar? So for those of you who don't understand what counter-battery radar is, it's a horizontal radar beam that's fired across the battlefield, right? And to the extent of its effective range, and it has a range, anything that gets fired from the ground through the radar beam that's horizontal to the earth, the radar beam, you get alerted. Something just went through. And then when it comes back down, you get alerted to that too. You put the two together, you get a point of origin, you get a point of impact. And you can shoot counter battery against it. But I'm curious, when did that get invented? It certainly wasn't available in Vietnam. Because those guys essentially went up near the demilitarized zone and moved conveniently under the umbrella of NVA artillery, North Vietnamese artillery, and got piss pounded, and then went into the DMZ on foot and got ambushed. So, I mean, there's obviously more to the story. But I was watching last night. I was like, good God, man. We haven't fought like that since then. The change in technology relative to the battlefield is astounding, especially if you're in America. They would do you a favor when they massed, because you would annihilate them. You would detect it. You would, our thermal stuff. You know, we have stuff that tracks vehicles and should they choose to mass, we would see that, and we would annihilate the precision weapons. We have radars, you know, as I said, counter-battery radars that get set up. If they shoot something from the ground at you, they would be annihilated. So Vietnam, you're sitting there watching last night, and that guy Musgrave, talking about him, and I want to say he's with 19. And then there's another guy from Boston. And he, and he's a black guy and talks about talking to his mom saying, yeah, I'm not coming home, mom. people dying here every day. We're not winning this war. Yet he survives. Musgrave survives a gunshot wound to the chest. And just him watching him tell the story, what's really interesting, and it happens on this program because you can feel it. When you take somebody back to those memories, you watch the look on their face in this documentary as they go back there in their head, it's pretty amazing to watch as they relive the experience. Lo, 50 years later. And it's as real as it was when it happened. Maybe not that real, but they go through it again, and you see the mannerisms. And so, Tim said there's nobody. I think he thought Musgrave was a shitbird. And he could speak for himself, but not wanting to key the handset. And so when you've lived a different reality, I mean, they would get it on with you. And as you've heard just about everybody say, they were good. They could fight. And they could get close to you too. So, but it's like embarrassed to even say, yeah, I was involved in Iraq and Afghanistan, but we didn't come close to doing that. Get it on with somebody who would kick your ass. You know, we may have been surprised on occasion and outnumbered, but somebody that would move on us, mass on us, and then kick our ass. Yeah, that's not in our experience. And if you lay down against us conventionally, you'll be annihilated. So it's a humbling to watch the military pieces of Burns' documentary, what those guys went through. And they just, I think, part five ends at the end of 1967. And as we were talking yesterday, things that they mention because the topic inherently is so hard to limit. You know, the riots that were going on in the United States, in Detroit. Not the National Guard, but the Army called out. Yeah. In Newark. And the riots in Los Angeles hadn't happened yet, I don't think. Honestly, astounding. The breadth of the subject matter, the turmoil in the United States, not just related to the Civil War, but civil rights, and how it all rolls into one. A couple of observations. I think I would tell you that based on emails I've got, a lot of people are surprised that Robert McNamara got treated gently. And joining me is William Constantini. Will, what's up? Oops, hold on. Wrong. Now, say that again.
What's up? I'm listening in. I haven't been on for a while.
Now, say that again.
Yeah, I'm listening in. I haven't been on for a while.
Take it off speaker.
Sorry.
That's all right.
All right, we're off speaker. I just been looking at your podcast list recently and listening to the opening monologue.
Hey, stop listening to the broadcast, you dope.
And I have not been watching the documentary. Hey, I got too many electronics going here. I just changed them.
Shut the broadcast off, you knucklehead.
All right. We good now?
Yes, we're good now. Talk on the phone. Don't listen to the other part.
Yeah, I'm talking. I'm talking.
All right, go.
I haven't been watching the
Okay, I'm just going to tell you, you sound like a stupid guy right now.
I'm trying here.
You know?
There we go.
All right.
Hey, so I haven't been watching the documentary, but listening sort of to the opening monologue and then looking at some of the recent podcasts and things, what comes to me is, one, you know, I think that you and I maybe have had this conversation before, that it is interesting at times how little we know of our own history. I mean, you know, we came into the Marine Corps in the early to mid-80s, and all the senior leadership, my battalion commander, sergeant major, all the first sergeants from my first battalion, we're all Vietnam veterans. But we actually had no idea what they had done. And, you know, we're pretty smart guys, and we figured out what the future of the Marine Corps should look like without fundamentally knowing where we had just come from. And as we continue to evolve the organization, if you don't know where you come from, how do you really know where you're going? And I'll bring this into another line that I note in the podcast, this idea of lack of bipartisanship in Congress. Bipartisanship in Congress is a historical myth. You know, it never existed. Name a time when people of the entire spectrum came together and achieved these great things. I mean, to reinstitute the draft before World War II in the House was by one vote. Read the history. You can't have a country that goes to a civil war where there's a great theme of bipartisanship and doing what's best for everyone.
Okay.
And so
I don't disagree.
We know where we're coming from.
I don't disagree, but we used to pass budgets. We did enact Medicare, you know.
Those weren't
passed on party lines.
No, and that's interesting. And that if you do pay attention to the history of the United States, and you want to enact significant social legislation, what you do is you get a bipartisan consensus. And that takes presidential leadership. And so we've passed some of the most recent legislation on single party, ram it down your throat.
Right.
And so we've changed the rules of the game.
Right.
And those type of a lot of that type of legislation is outside the norm of the historical path of the country.
Right.
To get back internal to the Marine Corps, you know, I don't know if General Kelly maybe didn't say it exactly this way, but hey, look, reading back into the pay table in Iraq and Afghanistan, we did the job. We did the mission that was given to us
right.
at the time.
Right.
That being said, what mission should we be ready for? Is the activity of those Marines in 1967, is that our definition of warfare? Or have we fundamentally changed our definition of warfare, and that's what we're preparing against? And if we fundamentally changed our definition of warfare, based on what? Warfare was pretty savage in the history of the Marine Corps. And I think there's some moments of that savage nature in it, in our experience, not
right.
as many.
Right.
But we've written that out of our operating doctrine. It's not going to be savage. It's going to be technical.
Right. Until it's interesting you say that because I was thinking about this in the shower this morning. Don't ask me why, but well, I'll tell you why. I was thinking about it because I was thinking about Kantian and listening to his narrative of what they did. Right? They went up and they took their asses and they parked it under the NVA artillery fan. Right? Then they dismounted. They walked into the DMZ and they got it on with the NVA. And so and then they took losses. They killed people. And you know the narrative on both sides was holy shit. You know this is demoralizing stuff. And the you know and if it was for us, you know the NVA talk about you know having units just annihilated. And so I'm in the shower thinking about counter battery artillery fans and when it was invented. And then I'm thinking about today. The first thing that a near peer has to do is it has to knock our satellites out to poke our eyes out so that you can do what the NVA talk about, which is grab them by the belt buckle and teleport the fight to 50 years ago. And then take them on. But if you can't poke our eyes out, then you will be annihilated. In terms of modern warfare.
Yeah, and so is, you know, with a potential peer competitor, you think that means that the war is going to be won before the first bullet is fired, right? Whoever wins the cyber war is going to win the war at a peer level. But even at a lower level than that, what countries out there don't have significant cyber capability or the ability to ramp up pretty quick in cyber? I mean, you know, Iran, North Korea are, I think, significant cyber threats. I don't know that for a fact, but I think they are. The idea that they wouldn't sell that to someone, and then so we lose our cyber capabilities. You can't move those PowerPoints all over the battlefield. You've actually got to do it on muscle. What you and I in our day were taught was the key to fighting, i.e. the moral isn't the physical, it's 3-1. Are we generating that force? And by moral, obviously it's not, you know, thou shalt not kill morality. It's the moral force of people willing to commit to each other. Is that the basis of the organization now? Well, significant things are going on out there. Tell me that it's not, or that we haven't really thought through what we're doing.
What tells you that? Well, first of all, I mean, the human
integration of women into the infantry,
which is going to happen,
right?
Which is going to happen.
Yeah, and
which has
and
already happened.
Right, any infantryman from Vietnam is mystified.
Right.
Because this is a group of people, some volunteers, some volunteer under coercion, i.e. the draft.
Hey, Vito, Vito, shut up for a second. I just got an email from Mike Marletto, which is significant of himself because Marletto's a smart guy. Okay. Do you know him?
I do.
Okay. Is he a smart guy?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Counter battery.
We'll see what he says.
The jury's out. We'll see what he's a fellow Italian, so you have first right. Counter battery radar was available in Vietnam. The Q4 was limited in range and was easily overwhelmed by mass fires. The radar capabilities you are used to did not get fielded until the early 80s. Semper Fidelis, Mike Marletto. So there you have it.
Yeah.
Smart guys are listening. Be careful what you say, Vito.
Yeah. Again, though, you know, we between those close physical fights, which occurred 50 odd years ago, and today. our definition of warfare has fundamentally changed, you know, a couple million years of human evolution in 50 years. That's what we think. Or we actually believe ourselves and says we can have perfect information across the battle space.
Because we fought less than near peers consistently, so that would so the argument that you're making says the reason that we would consider including women is because it's physically not the job that Lance Corporal Musgrave experienced at Compiègne, and so because it's not that job anymore, we can have lower the standards without fear that we will be overwhelmed in combat. That is not the same physical requirement. So let me ask you this: if you believe that, then the leadership of the Marine Corps, you see it as a moral imperative that's wrong, and that people won't step up and simply take it on. Yeah, is that a fair characterization?
Your first statement. We've never overtly said those words, but that is looking as the arc of what we've done. That's what we've said to ourselves.
Right. And I'll tell you what, and you don't need to have to look any further than General Barrow's testimony in 1990, whatever, early 1990s, when he talks about what combat is. And then he's asked, well, you know, women have been shot at. He said, that's not combat. Combat is locate, closing with, and destroying. It is going and rooting them out, and it is killing them. That's combat. Getting shot at in the AO is not combat. Now, General Neller comes on last year, and he says, women have been in combat for a long time, Mac. You know that, right? Which is the fundamental definition that you're talking about. Barrow says no. Neller says yes. And that's just illustrative of your point, yes?
Yeah. And the problem is that, look, I had some moments in Iraq, mostly of exhaustion. And exhaustion due to sleep deprivation as opposed to physical activity. Look, I was laid under reconnaissance. We're not getting out of the ground a lot. But in the training environment, I reached damn close to my physical capability. All right. I'm not an Olympic athlete, but I was going, you know, 6 foot, 190 plus, fairly fit guy in some pretty hard-nosed infantry battalions, and as a lieutenant, you can't go past your physical capability because then you've got no credibility within that organization. So you've got to have that capability. Any lieutenant in any battalion you were in, you well know that fell out. That was the end.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
No, and so. Are we gonna self-regulate the amount of activity that we're gonna do now in that training environment to ensure that these people are successful? Because we know that their ceiling is just much lower. Well, if that's the case, then we limit the combat capability of the organization from there.
So let me ask you a question. So ultimately, the issue comes down to standards. Okay. Do you believe that have you had a chance to look at the MOS standards that have been put in place, and do you believe that they're reflective of the requirement in combat? And do you believe that women can do that, or is it simply a moral failure on the leadership of the Marine Corps to stand up in the Senate Armed Service Committee and look at Jody Ernst and Elizabeth Warren and the other one starts with a G, what's her name?
Christine Gillibrand.
There you go. And say, we're not buying it. It can't happen. And the only way that this is going to happen is if they accept the male standard and they enter and meet all those standards. That's the only way it can happen.
Here's what I say. Okay. If you believe that it's only about defined standard, then you need to change the doctrine. Right, the doctrine starts out with moral is physical is three is
one. The doctrine starts out with what?
The moral force is the most important thing. And so while the standard is absolutely important to building that. There is a force out there that can't be defined by a standard. That's a willingness of people to commit to each other because they believe in each other.
Okay, and so you would submit. So you would submit that gender integration violates that principle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't submit. It's a fact. All right. It's a fact of a couple million years of human evolution. It's not a submission. On the other side, as well, when you get into the standards game. Now you put the DoD subordinate to the Department of Labor. And, okay, here's the standard. Who says it's a standard? You've got to define your definition of warfare. That's why your definition is 50 years out of date. That's never going to happen again. How many times have we heard that? That's never going to happen again.
Yeah, I never sat in those, meetings. I never got to the rarefied air where those things were discussed. So,
yeah, but just look at the historical arc after World War II. Well, amphibious assault, that's never going to happen again. Thank God for a guy like Vandegrift, right?
Right.
And we'd still be engaged. Well, we really got pushed off at Busan.
Right.
Because that's never going to happen again. So it's really a false choice. You can face the facts.
But here's the deal, Vito. The Will Cosentini's my guest here this morning, impromptu. I mean,
once I unscrewed my electronics.
Exactly, which made you sound like a really dumb guy. And it's just everybody. He's not a dumb guy. Okay, he's done some dumb stuff, but not a dumb guy. But the DOD, the Army and the Marine Corps are holding on by their fingernails relative to gender
and
integration.
That's what I said. It's easy to be on this side of the commandant's desk. It's
right.
Really hard to be on that side.
So to cut to the chase. So if you want to stand with that position, you'll be thrown out of the Department of Defense. You'll be called a knuckle dragger. You'll be fired from your job, and the next guy's going to implement it. So
yeah, I would say one thing though.
Okay.
Is that you listed off some women. Jody Ernst.
Right.
Senators
on
the
Senate Armed Service Committee. I'll give you a recent example that has to deal with the United States Navy. Just the other day, right, the CNO and SECNAV testified in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee. One of the things SECNAV and the CNO both said, look, you guys keep levying these tasks on us. All these different classes, all this different training that we have to do, and you never take anything out. Right now, pregnant in all of that is sexual harassment, sexual assault, all that training that has been mandated by DOD to DOD to execute. But nobody mentioned anything. Right? It was just you guys keep doing this to us. Well, chief among this, and I will tell you this: the reason none of them said that shit was because they would have got thrown out on their ear by those three senators. Okay?
Yeah, and so here's where I am on this. When was the last time Kirsten Gillibrand called the commandant and said, hey, Bob, how can I help you? Never. Kirsten Gillibrand hates the Marine Corps. She hates what it is, what it stands for. She's never done anything to make it better. She's never asked, how can she help make it better? Why then do we allow ourselves to be whipsawed by Kirsten Gillibrand? She's never going to support us. She's never going to support a budget, which congressional testimony is only about the money. She's going to make a big splash in the media. If it's the right thing, we should do it whether Kirsten Gillibrand is going to go after us or not. And there's going to be times we're going to do things that she's going to agree with. And there's
okay,
going to be times
okay.
That
you
that
know,
we don't.
You
What's the right thing?
Okay, so I've got a guest coming on in a few minutes. So Let me ask you this. You've served in a very high capacity in the Marine Corps as a support guy. You know the men that have led this organization. They're some of the leading and brightest men in the Marine Corps. Why don't explain to us why don't they do that?
Again, it's a lot easier to be on this side of the desk than that side of the desk.
Right.
You know, you're betting the Marine Corps when you do that. And so that makes you naturally conservative when you're on that side of the desk. And I was there with people that I absolutely admire and respect. And at times disagreed with. They were four levels higher than I was. I never got to a point with anybody that someone told me to do something illegal, immoral, unethical. I disagreed with some of the approaches. I won some of the arguments and influenced some of the approaches. When I come on and talk to you, et cetera, I hope it contributes to the greater discussion that maybe uncovers within senior leaders some different thoughts, methods, ideas. I am never going to come out here and say, yeah, the commandant's wrong. Eh, he's actually the commandant. That's
why not? Why not? Why not? If he's wrong, why not call him out? We can't do. We can't play.
I disagree with him.
Okay.
I disagree with him.
All right.
On this. I absolutely disagree with him.
Okay, so
I disagree with him that, oh, we got to do better on Hilo Dunker. That's fucking who? At some point, you got to do critical thinking, and it becomes a math problem. What's the time? What are you going to take out? What's the risk? You can't just say, oh, we can do better on all these things. No, we can't. And if we can, what you said is people aren't trying hard enough. Mm. I'm going to stipulate people are trying. So,
well, let me tell you, what's interesting and illustrative of that is what we're watching the Navy talk about. McCain, at the end of the hearing, he talks about you can't send these ships to sea for 7 months, right, and expect consistently and expect people to reenlist. Hey, look, Senator, it's not my choice to send them to sea, but I have these missions, I have these assets. You've shrunk the number of ships. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to simulate that ship going to sea? Would that make you happy? Does that cover the South China Sea for you, Senator? I didn't create the math to all of this. You did.
Right. The other part of that, too, is if you're the CNO in that respect, I'm not going to play the bitch, but I'm going to say, hey, Senator, I'm attempting to do risk management within the constraints that I have. I will happily widen that pool of constraints. And the Navy has submitted a shipbuilding program supportive of that. Bounce the ball right back to them. But they don't bounce the ball, and you can't play the bitch.
Right.
So?
Right. No, and not only the shipbuilding, but the dry dock building, which is another $5 billion. Right. And so, no.
The recruiting,
all right,
the retention.
So bottom line, nobody, I would submit this to you. There's not too many Marines, infantry, there's not too many infantry officers in the Marine Corps that thought the day would come that we would have a woman get through the infantry officer course without the course being modified. That's happened. That's going to happen next week. Right, so I would tell you that the general sentiment is, holy shit, if she can do that, then have at it. I mean, that would be my sense. If she can do that, then have at it. Your response.
Then change the doctrine. Change the doctrine.
Change the doctrine to say what?
To say that we are simply a building block, and you can put blocks together, and. Relationships between people are irrelevant,
and gender is irrelevant, because that's what you're pointing to. Gender's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a million years of human evolution is irrelevant.
But again, okay, so the argument to that is that she met the same standard that you met, the same standard that I met. Probably
a higher standard.
Probably, yeah, higher standard.
A higher standard
yeah,
than I met.
Than you and I both met, because the course is more
Absolutely.
Difficult these days. And so what we would say is, even though she's met that, there is a cohesive element that is beyond gender, and you can't fuck with that at the pointy tip of the pier where people are going to locate, close with, and destroy the enemy, and therefore we can't go there.
Yeah, Max, you and I don't say that. 4,000 years of written history about warfare say that, and our doctrine embraces that. Those are facts that can best be determined by looking at history. Okay, we didn't come up with that.
So bottom line is this: relative to infantry operations, gender trumps. Gender is the trump card.
Relevant to intense combat operations.
Okay, so gender is the trump card. Relative to intense combat operations.
Yeah.
And 4,000 years of our history proves that.
I think so. That's how I read it.
All right. All right. Can we continue this discussion at another time?
I don't know. I actually got a paying job I need to show up for every once in a while. So.
All right. Well, good luck with your paying job.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
All righty.
Thanks for the call.
I'll listen to your podcast this weekend. I'll give you criticism in another format.
Well, you tee up the Vietnam War series. I think you'd enjoy it.
I had a hard time.
I know. But I'd just be curious. I get mixed reaction from Vietnam veterans, which is very interesting. They have great anxiety about the subject being treated at all because they feel they're going to get screwed over again. But I would tell you from the majority of those guys, what I hear is that they believe it's a balanced representation. And then the early election results say McNamara got treated with kid gloves. You know, one other thought about Vietnam guys. I never got taught a lot about Vietnam by those guys. And then I was thinking about this recently. You know, I stumbled into My Lai and did a bunch of shows on My Lai. Why didn't Marty Brantner, two Navy crosses in Vietnam. Why didn't Marty Brantner sit us down, and why didn't I learn about Con Tien from guys who were there? Because, shit, I was a second lieutenant in 1984 in the 1st Marine Division. I never got a PME on Con Tien. I never got one, you know, about the rock pile. I never got one about the bridge at Dong Ha. You know, it was like we didn't talk about that. And so it's just interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I'll give you one quote. My first sergeant was a guy named Weathers, Pappy Weathers. And somehow it came up in conversation, you know, what we ought to learn, et cetera. And he said, "Sir, I was a company gunny when I was a corporal. The Marine Rifle Company in Vietnam was 68 guys running around in rags for 2 months. I got nothing to learn from that."
Whoa.
Actually, okay. There's a lot to learn from that. But that was
let me tell you what we were doing.
Great, great man.
Yeah, we were what was interesting at the time in the early 80s is that you could still wear we had transitioned to Woodland Utilities, but guys would pull out their Vietnam shit, and you'd see them in the field, right? You'd see on occasion, not often, you know, you'd see the slanted pockets, and you'd go, whoa. You'd feel the lighter material, right? And then jungle boots were just being outlawed, right? We don't want to see jungle boots. We don't want to see bush covers. And so when you'd see that shit, you would look and you'd say, and you'd look at the bottom of a jungle boot, and not the Vibram sole, but the spiked sole kind of thing, and you'd say, Why aren't we wearing that? The thing dries out. It drains. Look at the bottom of the sole. You could, like, walk up a hill in it. Like, that thing's good to go. Yeah, sorry. The only way you could wear it, you could sneak it, and you buy jungle boots that were green, and then you'd have to dye the green black and then hope nobody noticed. Hey, Lieutenant, are those jungle boots? Huh? No, no, they're not.
I think Al Gray let it all come back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but and then you'd see just the material of the uniform, and you say, why don't we wear that anymore? Yo, man, it's
interesting. Did the organization reject all of that?
It did. I mean, my experience as a lieutenant, it did. Bigger than shit.
And my first sergeant, you know, sort of says it in a way that maybe the commandant wouldn't have put out there, but a rifle company has a company getting as a corporal with 68 guys running around in rags for 2 months. I got nothing to learn from it.
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe that's what the entire Marine Corps said.
Wow. All right. Well, good luck at work today.
All right. Thanks.
Well, there you have it. Will Cosentini stopping by to throw up and in on the program. All right. I've got to take a break. We're supposed to talk about cooking here in a second. And we will, because Kim's standing by. My hetero life partner's standing by. But I do want to... This whole series makes me reflect. Like, why... Marty Brantner just passed away recently. God bless him. Marty Brantner was my regimental commander. Okay? And Martin Brantner. And we would see him running around Camp Margarita, which used to be the home of the fighting 5th Marines. And... he was our regimental commander. He had much of his calf shot off. And so when he ran, he limped. And he's a big guy. He's built like Zinni, you know, broad shoulder. I mean, he couldn't have been more than 5'9", 5'10". And, you know, but every day he'd be out in his red PT shorts. He'd be rolling around Margarita three times, which was 3 miles, and we'd always watch him, you know, just sneaking a peek out of the corner of your eye at him, and you just look at his leg that got the shit blasted out of it. Marty Brantner, a native of Minneapolis, Minnesota, wound up being a lieutenant general in the Marine Corps, and Navy Cross with a star. Right, Purple Heart. Let's see. And a whole bunch of other stuff. But, yeah, it's just odd that they fought the NVA, and now you're watching this on TV, and you're looking at the battles that they're involved in, and it's like, why didn't they tell me about it? Why didn't they sit me down and say, hey, Lieutenant, come here, get your ass in here. Get your dumb ass in here, and let me tell you what it's going to be like. But it's like the Marine Corps ran away from Vietnam, which is kind of an interesting storyline that we'll talk about. Now, you know, we're going to get Tom Drowdy to come out, and he's been traveling, and... So we're going to get Tom Drowdy to come on. And we'll get guys like Tony Zinni and General Van Riper on and to talk about, did we run away from Vietnam to our own detriment? So anyway, so let me halt the program. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. My hetero life partner is going to join us. The show opens on Friday with Whitney Houston singing the national anthem. Good morning to you.
Who's Through the night with the light from above, from the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, white was home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. Done, Dad.
I love that. Colleen, and then second lieutenant's getting commissioned in the rotunda of the cathedral.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
All right, we'll check the weather real quick. I was just reading about Marty Brantner. In July of 1968, General Brantner returned to the Republic of Vietnam, where he joined 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, serving as a rifle company commander, and upon promotion to major in November of 1968 as battalion operations officer and battalion executive officer. While serving as commanding company commander, Company D, he was wounded in action and twice awarded the Navy Cross, the nation's second highest award for valor. So, 1-5 in 1968, that's way, right? He is one of only two Marines to earn that distinction in the Vietnam War, which is the being awarded two Navy Crosses. Who's the other one? Now, my list of things to do keep growing. All right, we'll check the weather real quick. Yeah, Marty Brantner, my regimental commander as a colonel. Currently 77 and mostly cloudy in Quantico. Camp Lejeune, sunny in 80. Granbury, Texas, where Mike Musselman is. It is mostly cloudy in 81 degrees. Listen to this. Big Timber, Montana. Cloudy in 34 degrees with snow. That's right. He sent a picture this morning. Snow everywhere up there. 29 Palms is cold. Sunny in 55. As winter sets into the desert. Not yet, but they'll still get rocked by some more heat, trust me. Cloudy in 53 at Camp Pendleton. Okinawa, dark, cloudy in 82 right now. Cooled off a little bit in Syria. Sunny in 93. Marja, dark, clear, and 83 degrees at the home of All Marine Radio. Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Southern California. Fair and 60. Looking for a high of 73 today, so it should be a beautiful day in sunny Southern California. Let me read you an email real quick before we go to the break. Mac, way to start the show on a subtle note. Kantian, I watched that last night, and I think I had the same holy shit reaction that you did. Pretty humbling to hear the stories of those guys. Then not only to go through that, the dude that was on TV, he gets shot in the chest. He gets drug out by Marines. Pretty pointed when he said, the only reason that I'm here and still alive is because from day one we get taught we don't leave each other. Guys dying to try to pull his body out. Other guys coming to get them. Him being triaged on how many different occasions and left to die and ultimately living. Pretty amazing story. Pretty humbling. Pretty humbling. Kantian, I have not read much about it either. I certainly plan to in the future. Wow, those guys were really put in a shit sandwich up there. Enjoy the discussion. And then from that, you move to women don't belong in places of intense combat. My own opinion is the Marine Corps has tried its best to steer to that course that it knows to be, I think, fundamentally true. But at the end of the day, we serve civilian masters, and they have pointed us in a different direction. We may believe it's wrong-headed, but I agree with something you said. While I'm sympathetic to what your friend had to say, I think he is ultimately right, that there is a cohesion element to all of this, and I think the long march of history tells us that. However, I think the Marine Corps has managed it just about as good as you can manage it. Commandant Dunford initiated the ground combat integration study that was flatly rejected by SECNAV. The data in that is what it is. I think that was an attempt by the Marine Corps to empirically show what we could expect, and then to say we'd like certain MOSs to be accepted from that. And in that pool would certainly be our infantrymen. Having said that, the fact that a woman has got through IOC, and you and your friend were right, the standards are much higher today than they were in the 80s. And in the 80s, it was no picnic either. It has always been a difficult, difficult, difficult course. Back then, they just didn't care. You would endure it, and they would pour it on you. Now it's a bit more refined, but they still pour it on. And the people to get through it, endure it, and they make it through. She has done that. And I think most Marines would tell you, we didn't think that would happen. We thought that the standard would be lowered, like you said, in order for this to happen. In my opinion, given the fact that we serve civilian masters, and in the context of that discussion, I think it is a huge win institutionally for the Marine Corps, because what this shows everybody is that a woman can do it. She will certainly be an exceptional woman, but the job is an exceptional job. I think it's about as good as you can get. The worst situation would have been if no woman had got through. Then we would be changing the course. So what I hope in the future is the course standards stay the same and are not changed, and that exceptional women can get through and become quality rifle platoon commanders. We'll keep our fingers crossed. We'll hope that happens. There's certainly much merit to what your friend has to say. But at the end of the day, we serve political masters in this form of government. Enjoy the program, and I agree with you. What Vietnam guys went through is humbling. I think it's healthy for us all to get our noses rubbed into that. And so when we see them, make sure we shake their hands, give them a hug, tell them that they are ballers and that we do appreciate everything they went through because we don't get treated like that. Enjoy the program. Have a great one. Let's talk about food for a few minutes. This is pretty heavy for a Friday. You know what? It's what I love about, you know, and it's what I honestly hope that this program would turn into when I started it, and that is a place where Marines can come and listen. And I get emails. I got an email from Japan the other day. Hey, I want to come on and talk about the shit the Navy's going through. Okay. And just that it would become a forum for smart, footnoted discussion. And I hope that it's becoming I hope that it's becoming that. Anyway, we're late for a break. We're going to take one. And then, you know, I've got a chance to meet guys like Bob Nielsen and different people that he's introduced me to and discover issues like, you know, the anxiety inside the veteran community, the Vietnam veteran community, as they watch this and go down this road again. Are you going to screw us over? Or can this be some kind of decent representation of our experience that leads to a greater dialogue? And we can argue about it. I would tell you, with the jury still out, because halfway through, if that? The jury's still out, but I think they're warming to the task. They're warming to the program, if you will. And again, there's people that have disagreements. I think the major one so far is that Robert McNamara gets off easy. However, I think what they've learned to enjoy is that there isn't one part of this. And again, these are early returns. Like the anti-war piece of this isn't overblown, right? To the exclusion of the North Vietnamese perspective, both civilian and military. It's not overblown to the exclusion of the South Vietnamese civilian and military perspective. It's a perspective, though, that should be included in the kaleidoscope. So, early returns. More of All Marine Radio on a Friday. Vito screwed the whole program up. Sounded like a dope at the start. Let me just tell you, in his defense, when you're talking and then you get it back maybe a second or two later in your headset, you can't do that. I would I literally fall on the ground and start twitching because it's impossible to function intellectually when you say it and then a couple seconds later you hear it. So in his defense, yeah. The technology piece, not so much. That guy. All right, we'll take a break. We'll talk food in a minute. You know, I'll tell you, we may not talk food today. You know, Kim grew up in the 60s, and he is emblematic of what's interesting is that, you know, his dad flew C-47s at Normandy. Right? His father was killed taking his brother to start school at the Naval Academy and got killed in a car accident. That's how Kim's father died. And so Kim is one of that generation of here's Vietnam, you know, our fathers, you know, everybody served, right? And that's what these guys did. And so we'll talk, we might talk food, we might not. But more of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.